Text Nummer 47.
Especially with Srinivasacharya.
so they can understand that on the disappearance and on the appearance scale, different attires, they can make a lot of advancement by approaching them in a more humility and a prayerful mood, and also the blessings to progress in spiritual life. So we know that Abraham Thakur is constantly traversing the spiritual world in Sriram, an intimate associate of Krishna. So he appeared in Chaitanya Vida to partake of the pastime with the Lord. So we can meditate like this, praying unto them, so that they can one day actually enter into the pastime with the Lord. Rashila Abhiram Das Thakur Ki
Jaya.
Shri Guru Mahaprabhu Ki Jaya. So here in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna is instructing Uddhava, and he's giving him an example of a pastime that happened between King Yadu and the Avadhi Brahmana. And as we go on reading Srimad Bhagavatam in the different cantos, we will become aware of how the Lord, how Krishna Sri Vyasadeva writes the Srimad Bhagavatam by citing different examples. And with those examples of the specific pastime, the Lord makes important, or he emphasizes specific points by giving a specific pastime. So even with great histories of the world, the Itihasa, we find that the Mahabharata is spoken for the less intelligent classes of people. So people like myself, or at least I still cannot understand fully Mahabharata. And we find in Mahabharata is the example of a pastime of Gandhari, who married a man who is blind. So out of her mood of chastity, she blindfolds herself. So her eternal mood manifests externally by herself, actually covering her eyes, because she didn't want in any way to appear superior to her husband. So of course this doesn't just stop at the point the relationship between husband and wife. It can go further, we can expand it, because that's the nature of spiritual knowledge. We can actually take on so many things in one pastime, or in one verse, in one purpose. So then we can extend ourselves and try to have a very chaste attitude towards our former Charisha Prabhupada, by being very faithful and being very loyal and sticking it out no matter what happens. And we can always show our chastity towards the Vaishnavas that we associate with, and especially with the relationship between the disciple and spiritual master. Remaining chaste disciples, which means humbling ourselves and following properly the instructions through service, having a service attitude. So this is the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam, so many examples as well. Lord Indra and Harshati, which teaches us how to actually have a proper relationship with the spiritual master, not to become puffed up by the little knowledge or little opulence that we may have. So in reading this pastime, we can actually get a glimpse and see how the Lord is giving such potent and such powerful pastimes to make such a strong impression in our consciousness. And the last example I can give you, which shows how we shouldn't commit the worst apparat, which is Vaishnava apparat. We see in the fourth canto how Sati quits her body. When she quits her body, she self-combusts her body because she wanted to relinquish any kind of relationship she had with an offender of the great Vaishnava, Lord Shiva. So she didn't want to be attached, or she didn't want to have any relationship with anyone who offends a Vaishnava. So in that way, she self-combusts, she leaves her body. So this is a very, if you read the fourth canto, it's a very vivid and powerful pastime. And you can understand the point that the acharyas are trying to make to show us that we shouldn't commit Vaishnava for us. So that is the instruction of Bhagavatam. All these pastimes are given for us to actually draw from them and see the just the importance of following the footsteps of the acharyas like that. So here in the translation, it's speaking about different pieces of wood. Of course, these are analogies that help us understand better the science of devotional service. So this analogy is that you might have different pieces of wood of different sizes, different qualities, but the inherent quality of every single type of wood, whether it's wood growing, you know, in Dandenong or in somewhere in Africa or Asia or Malaysia, then having cultural food is that it has the fire elements within it. So whether if they have different qualities, there's always that fire element. So it's in a similar way, although there's different species of life, we know there's 8,400,000 species of life, in each and every life form there is the presence of the Supreme Lord who is in the living entity. So not taking into consideration what type of body or what type of quality, the Lord resides within the living entity. Like that. So this is the first point that that will come out in the purport as well, making a clear distinction that the Supreme Lord is residing in higher life forms and in lower life forms. So Krishna from down from the planet of Brahmaloka down to the insignificant living entities, even the ant, the Lord is residing in the Supreme Soul. It's a super soul. So here we get to understand one important point that's been really in our sampradaya, that we have this sambandha with the Lord, we have a relationship with the Lord. And whether we remember, we're in a state of remembering it or not, that sambandha is there. And after understanding that, yes, there is that sambandha, but how do we actually make ourselves remember that that sambandha we have? We have to practice devotional service. And that we'll discuss as we move along with the purport. So that's the first point, that we have the sambandha with the Lord, and we have to revive it, as given in the translation in the purport. So here it also may come to our knowledge that the Lord enters and the Lord incarnates in different means, in different ways, manifesting different varieties and qualities. And we see with the evolution of the Lord's incarnation, the Lord incarnates in, you know, the planet of the demigods. He takes birth in so-called human species of life. He comes as half-man, half-lion. He comes as Varaha, Varaha, Nrsimhadev, Kurma, Matsya, all these different species of life. But still, he does not assume the identity, which means he doesn't get covered by the identity. Because the Lord appears as he is, as the purport says, he is Jivu, he is the all-powerful personality. So even if he takes the form of lower species of life, he still remains pure and uncontaminated by the modes that may be associated with that that particular living entity. So you can see with the example of Lord Varaha, that the Lord appears as a whore incarnation, but it's not that he had his pastimes. You know, he came out of his mother's war, and then he was outside playing in the dust and like going to the garbage cans, and you know, he got married and he had little Varaha running around. The Lord appears as Varaha. You know, you don't see boars being born with golden hooves. You know, boars don't come out with ankles and all these amazing qualities, and that is because that is the Supreme Lord. He appears as he wants, when he wants, and however he wants. So at any point he cannot ever be covered by the modes of material nature, although he may assume the identity of lower life forms. Like that. And the analogy that Sri Prabhupada most of the time gives is the analogy of the sun. That no matter where the sun might spread its rays, it can never become contaminated because it's pure. So similarly, the Lord is extending himself by his nostrils, anything that he can never become contaminated by the world. So he can never be tainted. And the Lord, with his different expansions, with his bigger expansions, like Narada and Prithu and different Kumaras, he expands himself in that way, but he's never tainted by it. So we can move on to the purport. And the first line, although the Supreme Lord is within everything, everything is not the Lord. So if people with an impersonalistic consciousness or mentality were to read, oh, the Lord is in everything, everything is the Lord, all is one. That's kind of like a New Age type of thing to describe spirituality. But of course we understand that, yes, the Lord is everywhere, but also the Lord has a specific place of residence. The Lord has pastimes like that. So there's an external manifestation of the Lord, there's an internal manifestation of the Lord. So it describes how the Lord is creating different entities based on the different qualities, like the Brahmas and the Jivagas are produced from the mode of goodness, and then lower entities like children and animals and beasts, they are covered by mostly the mode of passion and ignorance. So these are all energies coming from the Lord. But that doesn't mean that he becomes covered or tainted by these energies as he takes birth as a Brahmana, or as he takes birth as a demigod, or as a human being, or as a fish, or as a swan. His form is always transcendental. His form is always such as Ananda. Like that. So here there's a beautiful explanation that's given by one of the acharyas here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada most of the time is quoting him in Srimad Bhagavatam along with Sri Goswami and the acharyas. And in this chapter specifically, this pastime of the Avadhi Brahmana, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti is explaining within the different analogies, and we're at this point where we're discussing the fire element within wood. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that although fire is present within smoldering wood, you know, we can only get the fire element if we try and ignite it. So we can have wood right here, but I can't just look at it and hope that one day fire will come out. And I'm desiring that this wood, you know, will ignite this fire, but we have to do certain things to ignite that fire. So that's the problem of devotional service. We have the fundamentals of the Lord within our heart. We're all part and parcel of Krishna. We have this eternal relationship with Krishna. But we have to do certain things to ignite that relationship from within the heart. So you know that the process of Bhakti Yoga, Srila Prabhupada, in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 26, he describes Bhakti Yoga. He says, Bhakti Yoga means there's the Supreme Lord, and there's the devotee, and there's a relationship. So even in our mundane relationship we've had in the material world, you know, you don't just call someone your friend. You have to know certain things about the person, what their likes are, what their dislikes are, you know, what rubs them off the wrong way, certain aspects about them we have to know. So similarly, the Supreme Lord, he has qualities, he has a soul, we have a relationship with him, so we have to act in a specific way to rekindle that relationship, that feeling we have with him. So here it is put by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that we have to hear and chant the glories of the Lord with love and devotion. So far we can hear and chant, but what's the motivation? We're just hearing and chanting so that we can try and find some fault, and then we can blaspheme the Vedic literatures, or blaspheme the devotees, or the demigods, or other parts and parcels of Krishna. The point of actually hearing and chanting is that will become so enlightened that we'll always want to hear and chant, and will extend that greed or that mood of enthusiasm to hear. We'll extend it and want everyone else to come and hear and chant about the Lord. So this is the way, these are the means and ways that which we can actually revive this relationship that we have with the Lord. And it's interesting, it's not just a mechanical process that after 5 years, after 5 nights, you'll be on a certain platform, or you'll be seeing Krishna dancing with the gopis, or you'll realize that you're a peacock, so you have to start practicing, you know, what a peacock acts like, or whatever. But actually, when you start practicing properly, this is a very scientific process, when you practice properly, you'll develop certain qualities that are actually very attractive for Krishna to see. So you know, with the different pastimes in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is describing the different qualities that, Brahmical qualities actually, that actually attract him towards the living entity. So you know, there's kindness, religiosity, cleanliness, non-violence, knowledge of the Shastras, like that. And then from getting all those Brahmical qualities, we go further, and then we become Vaishnavas, and become devotees. Because we become a Brahmana, we can become a Brahmana but not a devotee, but that still doesn't purchase Krishna. Krishna is purchased by Bhakti. So once we develop all these qualities, we can actually purchase Krishna. And in the section in the first canto, I think it's the 27th chapter, where Yudhishthira Maharaj is speaking to Arjuna. Arjuna is coming back and he's lamenting because he can see the signs that Krishna is going to end his pastimes. So in the first text, then I'll just read the verse, and basically it will speak about how one can purchase Krishna. The verse is Bhagavan api govindo brahmano bhaktavatsala kachit purush yudhamayam sukham asya shodhik vitam. And the translation is, if the Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, who gives pleasure to the cows, the senses, and the Brahmins, who is very affectionate towards his devotees, enjoying the pious assembly of Loka Puri surrounded by friends. So in the Prabhupada, Shukha points out that the Lord here is addressed with different names, Bhagavan, Govinda, Bhaktavasana. And the Shukha part is explaining the different qualities of becoming a Brahmin. Prabhupada said, and after surpassing the wonderful perfection, one has to become the devotee of the Lord, so that his loving affection in the form of the pastor, master, friend, son, and lover can be transcendentally achieved. The stage of the devotee which attracts the transcendental affection of the Lord does not develop unless one has developed the qualities of a brahmana above mentioned. So you can see here that Krishna, in order for us to attract the Lord, we have to develop certain qualities, humility, forbearance, steadfastness. We have to show Krishna that we're willing to do everything to actually possess these qualities. And you can see with the different pastimes in the Bhagavad Gita, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have the examples of Raghunath Das Goswami, Haridas Thakur, the extent of humility and forbearance that they practice, and that attracted the Lord. And within the Srimad Bhagavatam, the humility and the character of great people like Ambarish Maharaj and Maharaj Chitraketu, how they can just, you know, accept willingly, you know, things that, you know, they didn't provoke certain situations, but still they accept it because they know everything ultimately comes from the Lord. And this is what this chapter is basically speaking about, the Amrit Brahmana. He is seeing Krishna in every single thing. He's seeing Krishna in moving objects and non-moving objects. He's seeing Krishna within each and every nook and corner of the universe. So he sees Krishna like that, and we understand that, you know, he doesn't make a distinction based on the body. That he's experiencing the wind, he's experiencing the fire, the honeybee, the prostrate king that I will give an example of that guru. So we can understand that actually, wherever we are, we can actually become Krishna conscious. We don't have to be in a very soft and comfortable situation. We can be walking around Swanson Street or Elizabeth Street or anywhere in the world, and we can actually be in contact with the Bhagavatam. Because so many times we know that the Bhagavatam is giving us, you know, eyes into the spiritual world, but it also gives us eyes to see what's happening in the material world. How things are getting degraded, or how things can change, or how preaching is going on so nicely. So you can see that actually we have to get to a point where we see Krishna through everything, and that's one of the 12 ends of your studying Bhakti Shastri is Shastra Chakshus, and that means you see through the eyes of Shastra. So the Shastra is giving us everything, understanding matter and understanding spirit. So when you go about our day, we're trying to train our consciousness actually to come to the level of knowing that, you know, I can derive Krishna conscious in any situation. I can become Krishna conscious in any situation. And this is what this Avadhu Brahmana is showing us, that he's becoming more and more Krishna conscious just by interacting with different living entities who have different, who are high and who are lower in terms of the scale of consciousness. So he's trying to derive, he's looking for the nectar. We understand that the pure devotee, he's like a swan, he can extract milk from a solution of water and milk. So that's the quality of the devotee, we're always trying to see the good, we're always trying to grab some nectar, like the leaves. We're not always stuck on dirty things and how negative things are, like the fly. So the fly goes to dirty places, the fly does nasty things, but you see that the bee is always searching for nectar. So this is the type of consciousness that we're trying to build. This is the type of consciousness that we want to have at some point. And then in that way, Krishna sees that if Krishna reciprocates, it's not that Krishna is ungrateful. In the pastime between Krishna and Gopi, there's that verse, There's a book also Shiva Ramaswamy has written called Narayana, and it comes from the verse where Krishna is speaking to the gopis and he's telling them that he's actually unable to repay them for that spotless service. That the gopis basically just live for the pleasure of Krishna. They abandon all social customs, all religious principles, and whenever Krishna, whatever Krishna wants, however he wants it, and whenever they go there, because Krishna is the prana, Krishna is the life there. So like that, Krishna responds by explaining that the gopis are asking Krishna, what kind of lover are you? You leave us stranded, you call us, and then you tell us to go back home? You know, what kind of person are you? Can you please explain yourself? We're giving you a chance, so just explain yourself. What kind of person are you? So Krishna starts explaining, and Krishna starts explaining that yes, a man of what you describe, I'm actually Atmaram, I'm self-satisfied. But although I'm Atmaram, I'm not ungrateful. So although I'm self-satisfied, I'm the Supreme Lord, I'm grateful for all the service that you're doing. And in that way, they again got immersed into pools of ecstasy, they were crying and relishing the association of Krishna. So you understand that Krishna appears, he's appearing here as a deity form, and it's not that Krishna is really hungry, that you know, if you don't get on the altar by a specific time, Krishna is not a saint on the altar. Well, Krishna has so many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune who serve him in the spiritual world. But out of his kindness, he appears in front of us, the conditioned soul, so that we can actually make progress, so that we can be benefited. So it's always that's what I'm trying to remember every single day, that it is for my benefit that I come and see the deity. And although we are insignificant living entities, Krishna thinks that we are significant, so he comes and displays his pastime, he brings his pure devotees with him, he brings the holy down, he brings us his holy name. Although we're just insignificant living entities, he gives us so much. So Krishna becomes very grateful when we actually try to have that relationship with him. So like that, we should try and perform devotional service and reestablish that relationship we have with Krishna. And by reading all these different explanations of the gurus, such as Avadhut Brahmana was explaining to King Yadu, we can come to see that if we're really serious about devotional service, we'll try and mold our consciousness in a specific way so that we can actually make progress, natural progress, not mechanical progress where we just want name and fame, or we desire some worship or anything like that. So here, of course, we've been speaking a lot about the spiritual mouth and how the Chaitanya Guru, the super soul within the heart, manifests as the spiritual master, because we're not pure enough to actually take instruction from him or to notice him within the heart. He manifests as the spiritual master, and in that way he comes and gives us transcendental knowledge and he engages us in devotional service. So of course I've heard so many times Srila Prabhupada in his lectures and in his purpose. Srila Prabhupada said that we should all become spiritual masters, we should all become pure devotees. And by doing that, we can help others also get on this path of devotional service. And I listened to a class yesterday Srila Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan in 1972, I think it was October 23rd, and he's lecturing on the nature of devotion. And he's saying that unless you actually become a pure devotee, you cannot become a spiritual master. So we actually have to become pure devotees. And spiritual master doesn't mean you have to go take sannyas and go to the forest and have big programs and make disciples. Becoming a spiritual master is that we actually inject this mood of remembering Krishna into whomever we meet. And when people see us, they'll automatically be up and become attracted to us and want to hear about devotional service. So this is actually the Vaishnava quality that when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll be able to see how the associates of the Lord actually had so many of these qualities, and that attracted the Lord and attracted so many people. That when they had Harinam parties going through the city or going through the towns and the villages, that people would just automatically start chanting because they had so much of Krishna in their heart. So we should try and aim for that goal, to try and get to the point where we're desiring to inject life into people's hearts. But right now, people are kind of lifeless in the sense that they're just living for the sake of living. They don't have a purpose in mind. They don't know what life is about. And we can try to give them some love, Sri Prabhupada's mercy. So here we can also see that Krishna is giving this specific example of the Avadhik Brahmana, and indirectly Krishna is giving us, you know, knowledge, and indirectly Krishna is glorifying the devotee by showing, by extracting the qualities that this devotee is showing as they go on through their journey in Bhakti Yoga. So we can see even with the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj was put into difficult situations, and the Lord, although Lord Brahma was given a passion for that boon, the Lord did not interfere with that boon, because he knew Prahlad Maharaj would appear and he would show the nature of a devotion, the nature of a pure devotion. So Prahlad Maharaj is showing us how to become fearless. And you know that by becoming fearless, one surrenders more and one knows that the Lord will protect me, no matter what circumstance, and that the Lord is always with me. The example of Prahlad Maharaj, how he was almost killed by his own father, but at the same time, although his father was a big demon, the king of all demons, you know, he is a charya of the demons, although that was his stature, Prahlad Maharaj not for a minute looked down upon him, or used negative words, or used harsh words. He was always actually glorifying his father indirectly, O king of the demons, calling him Sri Hiranyakashipu, like that. So that's a Vaishnava, that's a pure devotee. We never, although someone may not be a devotee, we shouldn't be inimical towards them. We shouldn't be negative towards them. We might know about Krishna and about Krishna's devotees and about the process, but people who don't know about it, they're in ignorance, but that doesn't mean that we, out of our pride of knowing, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, out of our pride, we go about broadcasting our glories, but the glory of the pure devotee, that he is merciful to all living entities, even those that may appear inimical towards Krishna and knowing about Krishna. Like that. So the Lord gives certain examples, and if we study Bhagavatam, we can see that the Lord is always trying to put forward the glory of his devotee. Like even if Maharaj Yudhishthira, how he was cursed, because you know, Mother Parvati couldn't understand that he was having a specific lasa with Lord Shiva. And for that reason, she cursed Maharaj Yudhishthira. And when Paul had come, he said, yes, Mother, I'm ready to go. I'll go and live out my curse now. He even started demanding, I'm such a great devotee of Vishnu. Vishnu is greater than Shiva, therefore, how can you curse me? He was humble. He had this mood of understanding, whatever happens is Krishna's arrangement, therefore I accept it. And then even with, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have such a wonderful pastime of Raghunath Das Goswami and Haridas Thakur, how Raghunath Das Goswami, out of his genuine humility, he thought that he didn't deserve even the association of the Lord. What, even to eat the same prasad, or the same standard of prasad as the Lord. So what they do in Jagannath Puri, after they offer the prasad, the leftovers are taken to the market, and what's left over is thrown away, it goes off, and the cows come and try and grab something from it, but even the cows don't eat it. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he would go where the cows left their rice, I think it was outside the Kalinga province, and he would take the scraps of rice that's gone off, and then he'd wash it and he'd start eating it, because that's genuinely what he felt he deserved. And then Gauranga Mahaprabhu found out about it, and then he went to Raghunath Das Goswami, and he was saying, you know, I've heard that you're eating such sanctuary prasad, and you give him some. And of course, God Gauranga, he knows anything, Sri Kalagya past, present, and future, he knows what was happening. But he was acting, you know, he was saying, you know, can you give me some prasad? I'm like, yes, but he's sanctuary, you have to check with me. He had to be merciful. And Raghunath Das Goswami was literally in tears, trying to hide the little morsels of rice that he had washed. And he was saying, oh my dear Lord, I cannot give you this, I can't do it. And the Lord just cried, and he tasted the rice, and he started dancing in ecstasy. And it's not like, you know, the rice was toasted in ghee, and there was cashew nuts, and like raisins, and all these nice things. He was taking the humility of what my dad was showing. And this is what has been pointed out by Shri Krishna Tyrus was showing. In a certain class I was listening to by His Holiness Ramnath Maharaj, explaining how the Lord takes our humility, he can see our humility, and that way we become very dear to him. Although, you know, we're in the smallest universe, the Brahma of the forehead, you know, he's appeared in time where Lord Gauranga himself came and enacted his pastimes. The Bhagavad Gita is here, the Holy Dhamma is here, and the Lord has reappeared in 2004 in Panchatattva. The Lord has come again, he's saying, I'm here, I'm even more magnanimous. What are you going to do about it? And I remember listening to His Holiness Jayadeva Maharaj, and he was explaining how on the DVD that yes, the Panchatattva have appeared, and they are huge, and they are very merciful. So that means, you know, Bhakti Yoga, devotional service, we're not just recipients, we're not just spectators in devotional service. We have to act. We have to perform certain austerities. We have to try and please the Lord to get more of His mercy. So he was explaining that actually we should be showing the Lord, I'm greedy for your mercy, I'm going to do Maha service for you. Because that's the moon of Kauranga Mahaprabhu. Everything he does is big. The kirtans are big. His gardens, his flowers in Mayapur, they're huge. Everything is just big. So we also have to serve the Lord in a big way. We have to extend ourselves. And He'll shower us with His mercy. That's what the Lord is trying to do. By enacting His different pastimes, He's enticing our consciousness like that. And Krishna Himself, you know, Krishna, and when He starts acting in this way, Krishna becomes, you know, a bit, not confused, but it's very clear He can't really understand why the gopis love Him so much, why they serve Him so much. So that's why, you know, we have the external reasons for Gauranga Mahaprabhu appearing, and then we have the internal reasons for the Lord appearing. And the three primary ones that the Lord wanted to register the position of Srimati Radharani, right? Because she's a top of servant. Whatever comes, she'll always be there. She'll never leave, she'll never leave the association of Krishna. And the other thing was quite funny. Krishna just wanted to understand his transcendental level. He wanted to understand what it is about me that makes people become emaciated and lose their lives. You know, leave the house without tying their saris, without taking care of their children. What is it about them that actually makes people go crazy? Like that. So the Lord wants to understand these things. And then lastly, He wanted to enjoy simply escaping by Srimati Radharani. So you can see the internal mood of the Lord is so deep that He really wants to relish, you know, the association of the Lord. Well, He comes as a devotee to try and understand Himself and to try and understand why the devotees are so exalted. That's why He stresses so much His devotees are more worshipable than Himself, because His devotees are very merciful. So you see Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, He says surrender. Surrender, actually, abandon everything, just surrender. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu is saying, I don't care. No, the night of David is like over a drunk king. He goes and looks at his treasure, he takes out all his jewelry, he goes into the tower and he just gives it to anyone. Street people, he's just giving. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu is like that for the most qualified, the most unqualified, and to the disqualified people from performing devotional service. He's going out and giving the highest form, the highest class of conjugal love, the highest to the most unqualified and to the disqualified. So it's such mercy we're getting from Gauranga Mahaprabhu flowing through Srila Prabhupada and the disciplic succession. So here, the last paragraph speaks about how foolish conditioned souls ignore the presence of the Lord within everything. They even think that, you know, it's all about, you know, creation is by chance, or it almost didn't happen, or there is no God out there. They're just thinking it's all about themselves. This false ego, this ahankara that everyone has. They think, I know the answers to everything, therefore this is my universe, and there's no other universe that exists. So this further traps us and fills up the mature whirlpool where we just cast into ignorance. We can't get out unless we actually get to this point where we're hearing about Krishna, we get into contact with transcendental literature or transcendental people, Mahatmas who are traveling all over the world. Unless we meet them, there's actually no hope. Although the Lord is in the heart, but we ourselves just want to be in ignorance. So Krishna fulfills all desires, so we remain in ignorance. Only when we want to wake up from our slumber does Krishna do something. He sends his representative. Only when we're ready, Krishna cannot force us to love him. Because we are a marginal of energy. We can either choose Krishna or the external energy. There's no in between. So we can't come to ourselves then like with the left foot, you know, we come to the temple and then a few seconds later, I think I'm going to go to the pub or, you know, grab a few beers or something. So that's not devotional service. The right thing is to go full on. Everything surrender to Krishna. So here the foolish people actually, they think themselves God, they do not believe in Krishna. Even if Krishna is here, they think Krishna is a very great king. The Mahabharata is a great warrior. But that's not God. He's just a nice king. There's so many demigods that can go worship and get material benefits. But what happens, the earth planet, Marsha Loka, this is the only place where we can actually perform some karma. We can get rewarded for activities. We can perform devotional service. When you're in a very lavish, you know, Swagaloka, it's very difficult. And in Swagaloka, you don't get any karma. You're just living out your past activities. And when the time is done, you fall back down to the earth planet. And when you're in the lower species, you're not creating any karma. You just keep going down, and then naturally you're elevated. So the earth planet, this is the only place where we can actually perform devotional service. We have every kind of facility, we have deities, we have the holy name, we have the most important, the association of devotees. Because it's actually devotees who take us back home. Only by their mercy, they're chanting and praying for us. So these qualities that the devotees have, this outer Brahmana, he's listing so many qualities that he's learning from different gurus. And we can learn so many things from different devotees in our everyday life. You don't really have to hear from the sannyasis or the senior devotees. You can hear from anyone, and they can remind us of Krishna. That is the point. We should treat every interaction as if our Krishna consciousness depends on it. That's the famous quote that is one that Bhakti Chaitanya used to say. He says, he lives his life as if every interaction, his Krishna consciousness, as if every interaction depends on him becoming more Krishna conscious. And that we can actually really become Krishna conscious, because we're seeing Krishna within the heart of everyone. And Krishna reciprocates. Krishna is not just inactive, he's active. He can reciprocate. And lastly, it says, one should cut off such useless entanglement and accept the fact that one is pure spirit soul, the eternal blissful servant of Krishna. So this is, you know, it's quite. This is who we are, it's a fact, but what are we going to do about it? That's the question. How serious are we going to be about it? Are we going to treat it mildly or treat it like a social thing, social gathering, or are we going to go full force, full swing, and just be greedy for the nectar, for the mercy? Because it's overflowing. So we get ourselves out of this entanglement of the material world so that we build for ourselves, by cultivating knowledge. Krishna is giving a lot of jnana, he's giving a lot of knowledge. So we cultivate that knowledge, and in the association of devotees, we get realization about that knowledge, and we further make progress in devotional service. So the next few chapters will be discussing further gurus, and there's one entire chapter dedicated to Pingala. No one would ever think, what can we learn from a prostitute? You know, what can, and there's a few verses in this chapter that goes on to describe the life of the two pigeons that were attached to each other. So a few verses describing so many things that we can learn from. So we shouldn't just discriminate and saying, Lord, I'm going to read this chapter or that chapter. I like this part of Bhagavad Gita. I like that part of Bhagavad Gita. All of it is transcendental. Every single verse can actually give you Krishna friend. Srila Prabhupada says, every single verse of Bhagavatam, no matter who or what kind of living entity it's speaking about, because it's filled, with the word of Krishna and his mercy. So just dive deep into these next few chapters, into these chapters, and try to really awake that relationship, that sambandha we have. And in that way, by practicing devotional service, we can start remembering, we can start acting accordingly. And when that happens, we'll be able to actually make that swift transition from cultivating our consciousness, from having a mature consciousness to having a spiritual consciousness and being Krishna conscious. So this is what I understood from the talks between Kenyadi and the elder Brahma. Now Krishna is still kindly instructing Uddhava for our benefit. Not that Uddhava doesn't know, Uddhava knows, but it's for our benefit that this knowledge has been given the way that it has been. So I thank you very much, Hare Krishna. If anyone has any comments or clarifications, might that they would like to say something?
Thank you.
Yes, The only thing I've thought about Abhiram Das Thakur, first he was especially a very close associate of Srinivasa Charisha, Narottam Das and Shaman Thakur, as well as Janaka Mataji. And they were very much encouraging devotees to actually go to Vrindavan and study under the six Goswamis and study under the associates of Gauranga. But it says he was married to Madhamalini, and the both of them, Madhamalini and Abhiram Thakur, they were very affectionate for Srinivas Acharya, and that they were always guiding him in his search for Krishna. As I mentioned earlier, he is Sridham in the spiritual world. Krishna's very intimate friend. So he descended like that to help others move along and go to Krishna in Vrindavan. He was a very, ecstatic personality. It says here that he had this famous Jai Mangal, which is a whip that bestowed, if it has to be bestowed, love of God. So imagine someone walking around with a whip like this, giving it to you. But it's a different type of whip because it gives you Krishna friends. So whenever I get to meet certain types of manatees, Gaurida Pandit or Shaman Srinivasacharya, he'd give him the whip. So I was all out of affection because he wanted him to get Krishna. So this is the only what I could find about him. And whenever the devotee would come as well, passing through, going to Jaituri Gram, he would give them shelter as well.
You mentioned the six Goswamis, and you're talking about the humility and how the humility can conquer Krishna. Could you elaborate how the humility of the six Goswamis is like the super excellent?
When we hear the six Goswamis all over there, you know, we have the Dev Khas, Sakamali, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami, very exalted. Even materially, they had such high posts, but they weren't so much attracted to it, or they were searching for Krishna. And even if you read the pastimes and the songs, the verses they actually composed, at no point did they ever, you know, say, I've seen Krishna, or I'm with Krishna. Their mood was always in searching for Krishna. And we have the famous verses where they say, you know, Krishna, where are you? Where are you? You know, they're screaming out for the gopis. Where are the gopis? Where's the servant? Where's this person? Where's that person? So they were always showing this mood of separation from Krishna. They didn't think that, yes, we're the six Goswamis, you know, we know Krishna, we're writing so much literature that we can associate with him. They were leading by example. We have to humble ourselves and act in such a way And you can see even with the lifestyle that they live, very simple, loincloth, you know, writing literature, helping others actually get to know about Krishna and activating the different holy places in Vrindavan. So the activities, the Krishna Katha that came from their mouth and their interaction with the Lord, they were always very humble in approaching the Lord, offering obeisances from far, or honoring my Mukhi the Prasadam, and sometimes not honoring Prasadam because they didn't feel qualified enough to sit with the Lord and to even enter the Jagannath Puri temple, because they saw themselves that they had taken birth in Mohammedan families, or they were Shudras, or coming from such so-called low backgrounds, but that was just the external covering. And sometimes people couldn't recognize them. I don't know who it was, and I think it was Swami who went to see the Lord first, and someone went to go call him outside, and he said, "I can't see a Vaishnava outside," because he was still dressed in, I think it was still in Mohammedan wear. He still had hair, and he was coming all the way from where he's from. So the mood, actually, if you read the books or the bhajans, they were always saying that we should always be crying and searching for Krishna. We shouldn't feel that I have Krishna right here. Krishna is my mate, Krishna is my pal. We should always be searching for Krishna. And not having this proud mood of their position, because they were very exalted, they were associating with the Lord. But at the same time, so they didn't take it like it's because of me. They were always praying to the Lord for mercy and for guidance. And whatever the Lord instructed them to do, it happened. When Raghunath wanted to leave at a young age to go and join the Lord told him, "Wait, your time will come." And he followed the instruction. So they were very submissive. They listened to the Lord. They have wonderful Vaishnava feelings. They never thought they were great or anything like that. In the past time, I'm sure it's that. They exhibited all these Vaishnava qualities. Not thinking themselves, Lord of the story of the street. Especially even if we see Shri Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he saw himself as lower than Mormon school. You know, how can that be? It wasn't just like an external, I'm lower than Mormon school for whom I'm so fallen. No, genuine out of his heart, when Haridas Thakur was beaten in the marketplaces, he was explaining that because I have heard an offense towards the Lord and his devotees, I deserve to be beaten in the 22 marketplaces. So that move, whatever tiny kind of fault or whatever tiny contact he may have had with someone who wasn't favorable, they took it all on themselves. And they said, "It's because of me, therefore I will go through this punishment, because it is for my benefit." And always in a prayerful position, "My Lord, please forgive them." Thank the Lord Jesus Christ. Always in that humble position. And what happens when we're like that? Krishna becomes enamored. Krishna puts his body and he takes a whip. When Haridas Thakur wanted to leave his body, because of such, the Lord made him the Namacharya, who was so attached to chanting the holy name, he wouldn't even eat before he finished his rounds. And the Lord came to see him every single day when he was in Puri. And he saw for after that, after when he left his body, the Lord was carrying him. Imagine leaving your body and being carried by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. What kind of exalted personality you must be. But still, in a very humble way, he asked the Lord, "Please let me leave this body, cannot serve." Always that prayerful position that I'm a servant, you're my master, no matter how advanced you may be. And we see it in ISKCON now, we see with the exalted Vaishnavas how they're pushing on the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And we also see with the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada in the Leela-Mrita, how much he was pushing at a very advanced age, how much he depended on Krishna. He never thought, "Yeah, Krishna won't give it all, I'm just going to sit and relax." He was always endeavoring, and Krishna would give. Krishna would provide the devotees, Krishna provided the temple, he provided the Lakshmi. He didn't call the institution Srila Prabhupada's house. He called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's always about Krishna. I come last, if anything. If the Lord decides, yes, fine, he'll bless me. But it's always about Krishna. And we see the success of Chaupati temple, we see the success of New Rajdham, of Gitanagri, of Goryoga. We see the success of so many of Prabhupada's disciples who are pushing so much this mission, how Krishna is providing so that they can do more preaching. So we can see that the fruits are from Srila Prabhupada's disciples. They're pushing hard and they're not deviating from his instructions. They're following in the footsteps of the Acharya. They're not imitating, they're following. So we can learn those qualities from them. Okay, so we can all praise the Acharya Parampara to Padaram Chakra that we may become one day qualified enough to actually understand the pastimes of the Lord and to actually relish the pastimes and share it with others, and that way Krishna becomes to be one of the first more. Thank you very much. Thank you.